is the inspiration, because one of the things is that after all of that time of unnecessary struggle, where you then realize, oh, you had it all along. You thought it was this thing that was outside of you, that once you got this thing, that everything was going to be okay and fall into place. And then you realize that you already had the thing all along, but you just couldn't see it. And so one of my inspirations is to help other people see that they've already got everything. They've already got everything. They just need to see it and then take the action.
Welcome to the Greg Allen Podcast. Thanks for joining us, where we talk about life. I truly believe that everyone has a story to tell and a lesson to teach, and that's what this show is all about. So if you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave us a review. It helps us connect, inspire, and help more people like you. And I just want to do a big shout out to you for taking the time to grow and improve. So good on you. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck in life. Hi, Stephanie. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you going today?
I'm really good, Greg. It's so exciting to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited too. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I run a property management company. It's called HMO Heffen, and it specializes in house shares, which the kind of legal term here is house of multiple occupation. But it's a house share a bit like Friends, the TV series, where everyone has their own bedroom, but they share the kitchen and they'll share the bathrooms as well.
Oh, wow. So I haven't heard of that before.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I hadn't heard of this particular business model, where basically it is we can get started in property, make a really good cash flow without owning the properties, and that's what this is. So you take a longer lease with the property owner, do the property up a bit, and then rent the property out. And so there's a margin in between. And if you get really good at it, it's a big margin, more than you would typically make on a normal, as a normal letting agent, as we call them.
Wow. So you don't actually, so this person in this business like yourself, you don't actually own the property. You're just leveraging off of the asset.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. So, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say that minimizes the risk quite a lot, doesn't it, by doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it means that people can get started. So say if you didn't have 50 grand to buy a house and start, you know, making your own business, you can build up leveraging the assets, and also you get opportunities to buy the properties using creative property strategies. So even hearing myself say all this about 5 years ago, I had no idea any of this existed. Wow. So yeah, it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, cool. So how did you even get into that? Like what started that off? How did you hear about it? So you've 5 years ago, you're like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. I might give that a go.
Yeah. Well, it was, I'll just tell the near part of the story, because otherwise it could go on a long time. But, the beginning of 2016, I was working as a contractor in financial services. Actually, decent pay. You get paid per day, and the contract, the company contract you through your own limited company. So that was going pretty good. But it's just those everyday moments that happen that just change the way you think forever. And one of those happened to me, and it was a simple telephone call that my mum called me one morning. I was getting ready for work, and she is on her own, and I knew that she'd been ill around this time. But I wasn't very proud of how I handled that telephone conversation. I was really distracted. I was thinking about this presentation that I was giving at work. I was thinking about, am I going to get out of the house on time, and all of this other stuff. And when I reflect back on the conversation, you know, when people start apologizing for calling you, and you know, my mum doesn't really ask for anything or really even call at that time. And when I got to work and I did my presentation in the morning, and I'm just sitting at my desk in the afternoon, and it just kind of hits me hard. Oh my gosh, this doesn't matter. All of this that I'm making more important than everything, it doesn't matter, because time hadn't come in today, if I wasn't at work, maybe they have to reschedule a few things. But actually, if my mum, you know, me and my sister are the only ones who are there for my mum, and I want to be there. It's not something. So I just thought at that moment, I've got to find a way to be able to live in the way that I want to live. Because say if she got worse and we wanted to spend more time with her, or even if she didn't get worse and she was well and we just wanted to spend time with her. Because the actual crazy thing about life is that it's become the norm that we spend more time at work with colleagues, often whom we tolerate, than we do with actual people who we love.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely a cultural thing that sort of sucks us into, society sucks you into that sort of situation. You're taught that way through school, aren't you? You're sort of forced to into the workplace, and then that's the culture within the workplace that makes you want to do that because that's what's expected of you.
Yeah. And then you realize there's another world, or I quite late in life realize that there's, oh my goodness, this is what people are doing. And there's so much, because then from having that property business to start off with, we then got involved later on with the online business world. And that was just, again, another like massive game changer. I was like, where have I been yeah. for the last 20 years?
Yeah.
You know?
So it obviously all led to that moment though. Like, what was your career like when you started? Like, did you leave school and go into a job in that field?
Well, what happened was I had a bit of a ropey start, because I had my son Alex when I was 18 on my own, really challenging in terms of Alex was just such a lovely baby. When you hear people talking about all the babies that drive you to the edge sort of thing, not deliberately obviously, but some babies are good in quotes and some are not so good in terms of parenting. But I was super lucky because you know, Alex was just such a lovely friendly baby and just such a joy to be around, you know. He was cheered you up. But it was a difficult time because I was 18, you're not very savvy and all the rest of it, but also I had a lot of shame. When I reflect back on it, I can see that. But at the time, you know, I think I didn't know. But what I can see when I look at that is that I had low self-esteem. I didn't really have belief in myself. The goals that I had for myself, such as they were quite small, you know, get a job and, kind of. But for a while, I didn't have a job because I started off trying to work because I thought it would be bad to be on benefits, as they're called in the UK, all the government payments. And so I tried to go to work, but because I didn't have any experience and also I had low self-esteem, so I wasn't really, you know, sometimes you can get by on confidence, can't you? And without experience, I could only really get low pay jobs. So I would be working quite long hours and then I would walk around to the nursery, drop my son Alex off, and then at 6 a.m. in the morning, it was cold, it was dark, pick him up 6 p.m. in the evening, it was cold, it was dark. And I just, something that they said to me, that was another little moment at the nursery one day, I thought, they don't care about him. It wasn't a bad comment or it wasn't intentional. It was just something made me, I realized, and I thought, how can they actually in the way that I would hope for? And that was what made the decision then to not work and to be at home on benefits. I think that added to the shame of it, to go every week and collect the cash with a book. It was quite a few years ago. You get a book and they would stamp it. And so you know, you'd have to go to a place, excuse me. And it just, the whole thing of it, just, it wasn't very nice. And I didn't want to be in that place. You know, that's not what I wanted my life to be like. And I started doing the Open University. I don't know if you have that in Australia.
Yeah, online, is it? Or?
Well, it is now, but back in the day, it was on the post. So you would get get the big, you know, it must have come in a little box, the big batch of books. And then after that, you would read through your books, you would, there must have been VHS videos that went with it that you watched as well. Yeah. And then you would do your essay longhand and send it off in an envelope. And then I would just wait for the post to arrive with the remarks back. Yeah. But that was really good because it gave me that sense of pride and like achievements, and I turned out to be good at writing essays. So I really look back fondly on, you know, have great memories of that.
Amazing. So what did you end up studying at Open University?
Yeah, well, I studied sociology, which, knowing what I know now, I would study something different. I enjoyed it. It was very interesting. But I think when you put a lot of work in, it's nice when it's not, is the word respected, or, you know, certain degrees that people really think, yeah, that's really cool.
Well done.
Yeah. When you say sociology, it's like, oh, but yeah, I did do well at it.
Cool. And so from there, what happened? So how did you get into finance?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, there were so many ups and downs, but how can I tell the story? It's that I worked my way up, and as I say, the objectives were quite low. I can remember one time I got a job that was £25,000, and I thought that was, you know, quite good. And I went to Edinburgh. I got to do a master's degree, and I was invited to do a PhD, and that was great fun. And through those connections, I got a job in the government, the Scottish government, which was newly independent at the time. And then I was doing parliamentary liaison for the Scottish government. It was, at the time, it was the Scottish Executive. It was the first step in becoming more independent.
Yeah.
And before it became the Scottish government. And so that role was super exciting because it was all about evaluating policymaking post-devolution, and I got to interview all people at all different levels within the civil service, as well as ministers and people outside who were lobbying the government, and that was super, super great. And then I decided to set up my own business, but it was more of a hobby. You might have this with some of your electricians who, they're good at their thing, but all the business side of it, they're not so good at. And that was my situation. I didn't even realize that there was like a system for business. There's actually a system for success. There's some steps that if you take them, you're really likely to be successful if you're consistent with them. Didn't know any of that. Didn't know about, or didn't appreciate about outsourcing and the systems that you put in place to outsource. I was literally doing everything. And and it was quite a hub business because it was a social network, and I was organizing holidays, weekends away, events, you know, my name was on everything. And so everybody would get in touch.
You get all the calls and emails and everything.
Yeah. So after 7 years, I did it for 7 years. I really loved it, learned so much. The things that I now know just seem so obvious. I can't believe how was I so clueless for so long. But I came out of that business and I sold it to somebody else who was part of the club with me. After 7 years, I was just so exhausted because every single Christmas and New Year, I would be organising that in Scotland, they call it Hogmanay. I would do this big Hogmanay ball for over 300 people in this huge ballroom, all these high costs. And then you've got the slight pressure of selling the tickets every year and all of the moving parts, of which I was in the middle of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. High pressure situation from all angles.
Yeah. And it was just so unnecessary that now I realize to be running it that way.
Yeah.
So that was great fun. And after that, I was a bit down again. because you just feel a bit of a failure, really. And so I started working again, and I just thought, do you know what? I had a bit of time off. Then I thought, do you know what? Just do anything. You don't have to go back to a proper career like what you had before. You can just go and just do any temping jobs just to earn a little bit of money. Think about what you want to do. At least you're out and about doing something.
Yeah.
So I started doing these jobs, more or less minimum wage, you know, working in, one of them was in a car showroom, being a receptionist, for example. It was quite a luxury car showroom, Jaguar, if you please. Jaguar, what was the other one? Land Rover. And so I was doing this, and honestly, Greg, it was boring because not many people come into a car showroom.
Yeah.
And I was asking for that type of car anyway. I was asking, is there any other things that you want me to do in between? Because remembering, you can't really read if you're on a reception. So I just, you know, I need something to do.
You're just waiting.
But what was the turning point there? Because we're getting up to finance. What was the turning point there was that I was obviously thinking that this was my job, that this is the sort of thing that I ought to now be doing. And a full-time job came up at this place because I'm just temping. I'm, you know, being paid by the hour on a temporary basis when people are off and so on. But a full-time job came up. So I got myself quite excited thinking, oh, wow, I can now do this job at the garage where I'm telling you that I'm bored at.
Yeah.
And so why am I excited about this opportunity? But the thing was, I didn't get the job. And I was totally devastated by the fact that I didn't get this job. And I was just literally, I would just be bursting into tears saying, oh my gosh, nobody wants me. I can't even get this basic job. What's happened to me? And, you know, this sort of business.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a low ebb. And then I went away on a holiday and came back. While I was away on holiday, the temping agency called me and said there was another job. There was a job at somewhere else. It was either office manager or admin assistant. And my head was going, oh my gosh, what do office managers do? How could I be an office manager? Could I possibly manage to be an office manager? And I said that I would take either of those two. And I went to the interview and she asked me about this office manager. I was so worried because I didn't know what office managers do, and I wasn't sure if I would be able to do whatever office managers do. And I got back to my car afterwards and drove back, and you had to call the agency to let them know how it all went on. Excuse me. So I said to the person, I think it went okay, I said, but they don't really tell you if it doesn't go okay. So I suppose it's just a case, wait to see if they say yes or not. Anyway, she says, yes, well, I know that it went okay. They've already said yes. They want you to take the office manager job. Oh my goodness.
Awesome.
Yeah. So what happened there, to fast forward a bit, was that I took on the office manager job. I'm obviously at a low ebb because how could I possibly think that I couldn't do it? I just decided that I would just take my notebook in on the first day and find out what they want me to do and just do it, because that's all I could do.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't freestyle when you didn't know what to do.
Yeah. So I did that, and it was for the guys were building windmills up in Scotland, but we were sort of nearer Edinburgh part of Scotland, but they're up in the wilds building windmills. So this is centre, it's like a hub. And so we've got all these different guys coming in, and, you know, my job is collating all the information, getting all the infrastructure in place, making sure the building runs well and all of that. And it was, I loved it because I really got on top of it. I was good at it. I could think ahead and plan things out that I hadn't thought of yet. And it went really, really well. But within 6 months, Greg, I was thinking, right, okay, what's next? I can't be staying here. And that's when I realized that's why I didn't get the job at the garage. The guy at the garage could see that that job is not the right job for me.
You're too progressive. You wanted to grow. You wanted to get better fast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I got back on my feet, and that is when I found out about this bank contracting. Because basically I was doing an administrative role in the office manager role, and I was looking for other things I could do. And I saw all of these roles, which were called things like project assistant or data analyst or project support and all of that. And they were working in banks, and I would read what they're looking for, and I said, oh, it's basically admin. And then it would say £200 a day, £250 a day. And I was, this got to be a mistake, because I was making like about that a week.
Yeah, right.
So I was thinking that this can't be right. But I called the guy, the recruitment agency, and I said, I've seen this role. I got the skills, but not, I've never worked at finance. It says you've got to be working in finance. What do you think? And I said, oh, what's the rates? Thinking he was going to say, you know, there's been a big
mistake. $250 a week or something. Not a day.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was correct. And so there was another little roller coaster where, you know, I've just come off the back of being rejected for the previous job. I've now gone into this job where I feel good. And now I'm applying for this thing, which I feel is totally out of my range. And I went to the bank and had the interview there and so on, and waited like about two. It was on a Friday, and they were supposed to tell me back in the afternoon, but all weekend I was like on this thing, oh my gosh, have I not got it. Yeah. And then on the Monday I was back at work, and my phone rang, and it was like one of those moments where you're always dropping your phone. And I ran off to one of the empty offices to take it, and I could barely contain myself, because he said, yes, I've got the job. And that was another,
wow, awesome.
That was another big moment. And I started to feel really good. I started to feel really good about things. And so I was doing that, and I worked in different places and for a couple of years, and, you know, kind of enjoyed it. It's not exactly my sweet spot. I'm not a details person in the way that you need to be a details person for a bank.
Yeah.
And my mind just works a bit differently. So I was always having to, you know, mold myself a little bit. So when that thing happened with my mum, the phone call, and I decided, I just knew from the beginning that it was the right decision.
Yeah, awesome. How did you lay out your goals and your process for understanding where you were going next?
Isn't it funny? Because even back then, I had a few steps in front of me. So obviously Alex was at school. He was a lively boy as well. He's energetic. But I didn't know that there was a system or something, but I would give myself 5 goals a year, like learn to drive. I would make them, well, kind achievable. Of some of them would be more specific and some of them wouldn't be. It took me many years to learn to drive one because I would have like a few goals every year, and I would really, well, I can't say do my best, I would do better some years than others, but I would sort of work towards them and put one step, but now I understand how it all works. So I've got a much more evolved process for the goals, because it's so clear that it's just as easy just to coast through life and not get any results as it is to really be intentional and get incredible results.
Yeah.
It doesn't really take a much more effort. In fact, I find the effort less to be good because it's less hard on your soul.
Yeah, it's rewarding. You know, you're getting rewarded.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I do a lot of coaching with, you know, electricians and electrical business owners and other business owners and friends and stuff. One of the biggest things, which is everything, is the almost a lack of believability around their capability. So they always undershoot like so far. When I say, where do you want to be in 5 years? Think like dreams come true. Yeah. And you could be like end of your life looking back and we can make it happen in 5 years. So write that down, put 5 years from now and you've achieved your wildest dreams. And it, and I'll say like, I don't know, just put one tradesman on or something in their business. And I'm like, that's not going to give you the results you need, you know, to have the life. Like it's very contradictive, but they don't believe that they can do it. And it's not until we do, you know, that's part of the coaching process is helping them to believe that it's achievable by them. And then once they do get excited about it, they're off, you know, it's within weeks. They've already, you know, months, they've already put on their first tradesman and they said it was going to take them 5 years. So
yes,
it's just, I think we just got to, if there's something that you want to do is grow and improve, then we've got to shoot for, you know, a bit further and not be so disappointed if we fall short. Cause I think the big thing for me is I see people, if we can shoot for, you know, let's just say if we're looking to make, I don't know, $100,000, someone might say in 5 years, if they aim for a million and they fall short at, you know, 800,000, you know, it's eight times better than 100,000 that they said. But as a result of the big goal, we reverse engineer that what needs to take to get there.
And you really need a coach. That's what I see, is that, you know, most success people have a coach. Oprah has four coaches and she's ticked all the success boxes that most of us ever want to tick. So that's what I see. I didn't used to really respect that or think that that was worthwhile, but now I can totally see, because I've seen the results in my life for myself and amazed myself so many times.
Yeah. Cool. So how's it changed for you now? What is your goal setting process for yourself now with, you know, the real estate business and your online business too? How do you go around achieving the things that you want to achieve?
Well, I have a way of thinking about, you know, where do I want to be, you know, in 5 years or even in 10 years, what would make me feel so happy? And, you know, I almost can't wipe the smile off my face because I just, I've got this unbelievable life. And so some of that is things that are just for my heart that feed my soul. And some of it is, you know, numbers that we want to achieve in our businesses. One of the things that I see is I can see a picture. I'm not very good at visualizing in some respects, those detailed visualizations that I hear people talking about, but I do get visualizations, but I can actually see myself in the video, and it's a big international event with hundreds, it could even be thousands of people, and our names are being called, and my sister and I are going up to the stage, and we're winning an award. I don't know what this award is yet, but I can see, I can just see everything and picture it and hear it. But it's only a little thing, but it makes me feel that all the things that I'm doing, that makes it seem like I only want to do it for the reward.
You've been recognized for your what you've done.
Yeah, and the second biggest thing is the inspiration, because one of the things is that after all of that time of unnecessary struggle, where you then realize, oh, you had it all along. You thought it was this thing that was outside of you, that once you got this thing, that everything was going to be okay and fall into place. And then you realize that you already had the thing all along, but you just couldn't see it. And so one of my inspirations is to help other people see that they've already got everything. They just need to see it and then take the actions. Like what you were saying, that's why coaching is so it just lifts your heart and your soul, because you're doing things for people that help them and help them to help other people as well. So I'm going off with the goal setting. So let me come back to that. So I've got these big ideas of where I want to be in the longer term, but in the short term, so I have my goal of where I would like everything to be in 5 years' time. But the one that I'm really working to is the one where, you know, what do I want to achieve in the year? And also I keep looking across here because I've got something that's a bit like, what's this thing called? You know, that you keep your cookbook on when you're cooking. So I've got one of them with my goals for this quarter, for example. And every day I also have, or every week I've also got a little card here with what I'm actually going to be doing in the next, you know, 7 days to achieve what's on my quarterly one, which is, I kind of found that I'm good with it, having it visible rather than just on an electronic.
Yeah.
But I have
I think there's power in that as well. If you're writing, I'm an advocate of writing with pen and paper because of the kinesthetic, touching the pen and feeling it and being a part of that. I think it's really important. It's like writing a contract to yourself. But it's like each task that you put down is each of those steps you're talking about. And then each quarter is like the 1 kilometer marker.
Yeah.
It says you're 1 kilometer in, keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super cool. No, it's awesome.
How do you ask people to do it when you work with people? How do you suggest that they do it?
For goal setting. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I ask people to look into their future like you did, and to have that moment. But also I talk about every point or statement that you make is a pixel of color. So this is a little bit technical, but think like back in the day, there was a 16-bit graphics, you know, it had 16 little squares and each one could be a different thing. And then went 32-bit, 62-bit, and now there's 4K, 8K. So it's like, you know, 4,000 pixels, and it creates a clearer picture when there's more pixels. Mm-hmm. So I talk about how every statement you make, and I tell people to sit in the future and date on the very top of their journal. You know, if today was the date, it's the 3rd of August, 2025. And then we write about our past 5 years and we make statements about everything that's happened and all the things that you have and the life that you live and the people that you're with and the friends that you have. And every little statement is a pixel of color. And so I get them to write a full journal entry of their future self and what it looks like. And it's pretty much a contract to themselves, you know, it's because you feel if you're going off track from what you said you were going to do, like you won the award, it's like you're heading to getting an award because that's your future that you said that you're going to live. And so as soon as you realize you're going down a deviant path, that's not going to get you an award. You want to come back to it because the award was, you know, the recognition that you were after. So, yeah.
That's great. I really love the idea of putting all the pixels in. And obviously I have pixels missing. So I think it's something to spend a little bit more time on the detail of like that diary entry. That's a great idea. I really like that.
It helps with when you're saying you're struggling with visualization, it really helps with that because you're almost storytelling. And it becomes really fun and a bit of a game. And like you're saying, you can't wipe the smile off your face. That writing about that and all of your dreams. The other thing I ask people to do is start with what you think you're capable of in your whole life and then bring it back to 5 years. Because you don't know how capable you are and you'll make it happen in 5 years if you make it happen in 5 years. So I think that's important.
5 years is a really transformational piece of amount of time. I actually have a part of one of the slideshows that I do where I talk about, you know, the power of five. When you have, well, it's a kind of a financial one, but it's when you have one property and you think about 1 month's revenue, 1 month's profit on one property, and say the property in question was 1,222. But when you think about that in a year, and then you think about it in 5 years, when in 5 years, if I'm remembering the right sums, it's over £73,000. And that is the power just in just doing one little thing. That's one property. And you can build it up from there. But yeah, interesting.
So tell me more about, so perfect segue into the property business. Yeah. So tell me more about this. So you've got a common living space, and then you rent out, you rent the property from the landlord or the owner. Yeah. And then from there you have some form of an agreement. What's the agreement called? Yeah.
Well, there are two different types. It can be either a management agreement or a lease agreement. We prefer to use a lease agreement. So just want to say that before I explain is that because this type of business, there's a low barrier to entry. You don't need a lot of money to start. You don't need a lot of experience. And it can attract people who want to get the money without delivering the value, without giving any time over to it or putting anything into it. But the way that we talk about it and why I think we've been successful in a way is that we look at it as you're delivering exceptional value, and because of that, you'll make a great living and you don't need a lot of money to start and you don't need a lot of experience, but you do need the right intention. And I think it's important to have the right intention. So yes, what you're saying is correct. There's a house. It's like Friends, the TV series. They're sharing. Usually it's kind of a big Victorian house. Don't know if that means anything in Australia, probably not. But it's that's a typical sort of arrangement. It's a really simple business model. You don't need a lot of money to start. You can make your money back quite quickly. Normally, typically, you'd be not making money in the first year on a lot of different businesses. You've got recurring revenue. A lot of businesses don't have recurring revenue. And also, we have the names and addresses of our perfect customers. So in the UK, each local authority, council area, has a list of everybody who owns this type of property.
Oh, wow.
So you can write your letters to them and say, would you like us to do it for you?
Yeah.
Basically.
So you've got your traditional property management company, which would rent out the property to one person. So you wouldn't go to a property management company to arrange this agreement. You'd go direct to a owner. Is that correct?
Well, you can do both, actually. You can go to the direct to the owners, which is what we normally do. You can go to the agents, because what the agents don't like, they might have properties that they are supposed to rent out by the room, but it's a lot of faff for them. They don't make enough money to make it worthwhile for them, and so they may want to work with us and satisfy their landlords and not get paid their commission as the letting agent, but not have to do the work. And so for us, if we had a great relationship with an agent who's bringing us lots of different properties, and we're doing the stuff, then it can work. But obviously agents tend to be a little bit suspicious because there's a risk to them that we might go direct with the landlord and cut them out.
Yeah, so you get the benefit of leverage because multiple properties, but then yes, the risk to them, so they're unlikely to do it. Yeah. So how do you deliver exceptional value in a service like this? What is the key value delivery points?
Well, one, you've got to make it a good experience. But to make it a good experience, you've got to have the operations. So, it's great being personable, but you need the systems to back it up. Because, for example, we've got fewer landlords, so that's an easier relationships to manage. It requires less systemization. On the tenant side, we've got a lot of tenants, so it requires more systemization, because the way that I like to do it is firm, fair, friendly, firm and fair, because I want everyone to understand that we are we are looking out for them. We do want their best interests. We want them to have a great experience with us. We want them to have a great experience within the house. But on the other hand, we can't do everything that everybody wants. But what I would like for us to have in every situation, even when you're asking me for something that I can't deliver for you, is that you go away feeling that your views have been listened to and that I've done the best that I can for you within the guidelines that we work within.
Yeah. So I'd imagine, are you trying to personality type match people so that you, yeah, you don't have fights and like random people just I'm going to ask you after you ask this question, the craziest things that you've heard.
We have had some crazy things. So what's been interesting is I used to do this myself, but after my previous business, I was really keen when we took on our first two properties. So we only had 9 tenants at that stage. I sat down with my sister Nikki, who's more detailed, and we talked and I explained all the process that I've been through with these 9 people. And she put it all onto this flow chart, and we created a system which we then were able to outsource to. Initially, it was a VA at the first stage to do all the paperwork that went with this system. And since then, we've taken on a member of staff to do it. And you kind of feel like nobody's going to be able to do it as well. Well, I had to sort of teach him, and he was 18 when he first started with us. So I had to teach him the skills, the soft skills, if you will, of how to know, is somebody going to be good? Are they going to be a good match? Apart from the paperwork side of things. And I realized that, you know, that is a doable thing. You know, I have been able to teach him that. And also we've been able to teach how to manage a house dispute between the tenants. You know, so-and-so's left their dishcloth. Their dirty dishcloth, or so-and-so's been using my tea towel, so-and-so's been eating my cheese, and so-and-so's been eating my sausages, and I didn't like the way, you know, all of that.
No, tell me the real ones. There's got to be like...
I'll tell you the real one. Yeah. I'll tell you the real.
Tell me oh my God, I can't believe that happened. One.
The very first one that really knocked me. I sleep very well. I was actually so worried that I, you know, wake up in the middle of the night. But the first one was a young girl, and she was living in our house for 4 people. And now we went round. Luke had just started. He's my assistant, or he's our assistant. And we went round there together. She wasn't paying her rent, so we'd gone round there to discuss it with her. And it was just the first time that I'd really, I don't think I'd ever experienced anything like it before. So we were talking, and she's kind of angry, rude, churlish. But I feel you can bring the energy to a better level just by responding. Not being angry. Yeah. And just trying to calm things down. Anyway, so that's how I was handling the situation. However, as we were coming back out through a narrow hallway, we're just coming to her room, she takes umbrage about something, and she just turned around and just put her face right in my face. I mean, really, really close, and started shouting at the top of her voice. I mean, screaming, literally screaming. Just... abuse, just in any order. You, this, that, the next thing, that. I can't even say the words. It was,
oh man,
it was kind of horrible, because I don't know how I say calm, because I was really shaking inside. Not with anger, it's just shock. Yeah. Shock. It was so shocking. And that wasn't the end of it, because she was obviously causing a disruption within the house. And we did get a message from one of the other fellow house share tenants to say that she was putting a pink ribbon on the door. Now, I didn't know about the significance of this pink ribbon, but it was so that people could find the property, if you see what I mean. Customers, if you will.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so she put this picture up another. And this led to another area of education, which was that we went online and found that there's a website where you can, the person doesn't need to come to the house. You can do it, you know, through Zoom or what, I don't know what portal they were doing it for. But anyway, that was a tricky one. And the lessons from that were that my sister, through in the UK, possibly probably in Australia as well, there's a process that you go through to evict somebody from your property legally. And it's kind of time consuming process because there's lots of steps. So overall, it can take, you know, three if you're extraordinarily lucky, but more like between 3 and 6 months to evict someone. So that's the process that we went through with her. And during that time, all sorts of things she was doing to the housemates and causing all sorts of problems. And what I realized, what I suggested in the first place, I kind of disagreed with my sister about this. I wanted to, let's put it like this, negotiate her to leave, incentivize her to move out voluntarily, if you will. Yeah. And my sister didn't want to pay her anything. But the thing is, you pay anyway. If she stays, you pay. If she goes, you pay. Yeah. So I would rather pay and she be gone.
Yeah, definitely.
So when we've had these issues come up since then, we've never had the issue go on for a long time. The next one was, I feel quite proud of, which is that I'm making it sound like it happens every other day. We've now had hundreds of tenants, and we've had three that were tricksy in this way.
Yeah.
And I won't tell you about all of them, but I'll just quick word on the second guy, which was that he because this was a shocking one as well. I was just at home and it was Easter holidays, and I saw something come up from one of the tenants, and it says that the police were around and somebody had, you know, broken in. So what I found was that this chap had got himself into some sort of bother with the wrong sort of company. Some guys had come to the house, broken down the front door, broken down this guy's room. No, they'd looked in all the rooms on the way and broken down the door of this guy's room. Luckily, the guy wasn't there. But can you imagine how terrifying that is for the other housemates?
Yeah, to come back to it. Were that other housemates there?
Only one, a girl. Oh, so even more terrifying because it was the holidays and the others weren't there. But I went around when this chap in question came back, and the police were there, and they were trying to say, no, don't speak to him or whatever. They knew of this guy already. I says, well, he won't be staying here. And they says, well, I think they said he'd done it before. They'd known of him before, hanging around in the place and causing problems. I said, no. I said, he won't be staying. I just knew that he was moving out. Come up what day he was moving out, because how can I sanction him to be living in the house, putting everybody at risk?
Yeah.
So I went down to the kitchen. There he was in the garden, nonchalantly smoking a cigarette. Could I possibly wait till he's finished his cigarette? I said, no, I can't. I said, no, I can't. You need to come in and let's have a word. So I just said to him, you'll need to move out. This isn't working out. It's putting everybody at risk. Actually, you're going to need to move out. So he started going on, all high and mighty. He knows his rights. He knows this. He knows that. Blah, 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 blah. So I says, well, what about next week? For him to move, I said we would give back the deposit and everything. Anyway, he did move out.
Ah, give back the deposit. That's a good, yeah.
Get out.
Cool. Yeah, it's definitely worth incentivizing people. Otherwise, they've got no reason to.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Cool. Great stories. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, it makes it interesting, keeps it interesting.
Yeah, cool. So How do you facilitate the pairing of people? That must be tricky to get it right.
Well, it's not that tricky. So now Luke, who does it all, he knows. So if we had, say, four young girls, we're not going to move in a guy who's in his 50s because it's just not. He may get on with them, but we're just not going to go there. So we just do it. And also the other important thing is, how do people present themselves? Because for a house share, you just need to be able to get on with people. So if you turn up to the first date, like the viewing, and you're putting your best foot forward, basically, at a minimum, you're friendly and polite.
Yeah.
If you're dismissive, offhand, rude, inconsiderate, all of those other things, then you're probably not going to be great in a house share. So I just ask them to stay alert to those things.
Yeah. So you do in-person interviews effectively. You make sure that you get to meet them in person before you're not just going off the paper resume or application.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yes. And we also sometimes we do a little thing on Facebook or Google, because one chap who Luke wasn't quite sure about turned out that he'd been in a very violent situation. You know, one of those for no reason, well, for hardly any reason at all, just taken upon somebody and given them quite serious injuries, and that, you know, it was all in the papers. So obviously was enough.
Yeah, and that was all right. Yeah, that's good. You got to do your research, hey? That's a good thing about the internet. You can't fake it too much anymore.
That was the next thing. So we the internet, we started off, we were doing this property business. It was all going really well, and a bit like yourself, you were doing your electricians business, and then you started, well, presumably people were asking you.
And I you know, when I was growing my electrical business, I was very resourceful, but then I came to so many walls. Like, I'd be asking people and they just wouldn't say anything, or they'd give me, you know, half the answer. So I was always left confused and didn't really know. So I was really passionate about giving back. So when I came and then I started off just doing little educational videos for my staff and put them up online, and people were like, oh, they're awesome. I was like, oh, cool. I'll keep doing them then. And eventually people are asking business advice, and I was like, yeah, I'd love to give it, because I never got it. So it's just eventuated from there.
Yeah. Well, it's very much like that we were teaching people like us who were maybe professionals, but wanted to be further ahead in terms of their investments, in terms of saving for the future. They might actually earn a good salary, but maybe haven't harnessed it. And this is a bit of a quick start into property, because you can, you know, manage these properties, make a decent amount of cash flow, get opportunities to buy them creatively, but also buy them traditionally, because we also build up our own portfolio of 28 units, commercial, HMOs, multi-unit blocks, and we've gone over £1 million that those are worth, but also we've got our business as well, and then now we've got this business we're talking about, Rent to Rent Success, which is a bit like Electrician Success in some respects.
Totally cool. So how does someone get started? Well, first of all, I could join your program to find out, but what was like, I'm thinking like, oh, that's interesting, I've actually never heard of anything like it. I don't even know if it's a thing in Australia. How do you go about starting something like that? How do you get an owner to opt in to your first business?
Yeah. So it's like we were just talking about before, with the difficult, shall we say, tenants, there's always something that they're looking for as well. And for landlords, it's really easy, they're looking for, which is the rent paid, the property looked after, minimal risk. The minimal risk is important. The emotional side of it is that they want to feel that they've got a good investment, that they made a wise decision, and you know, the logical side is they don't want any hassle. And so when you can provide a solution that meets all those points. And when you can use the language that the landlords use, when you can show you understand that problem and your solution is compelling, then people are drawn towards you. And it means that you don't really have to sell. When people coming to you, they want what you've got.
Yeah, I see it as, from my limited understanding of this whole thing, I see it as, if you've got four tenants in there, you could possibly drive a higher rent because each tenant is like, you can get per individual, yeah. You can get more. Yeah. So the landlord could get more. The risk is minimized because if one tenant leaves, the other three are still there. Yes. And the tenants benefit as well because they don't have to hire a whole house or rent a whole house. Yeah. They could just minimize the cost through that. I suppose that's what Airbnb has gone a bit ballistic because that's like similar.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah, lots of people are doing Airbnb, although that is that's a tougher business. There's more operations, more logistics in that because your guests are coming, you know, possibly every few days. Whereas, a lot.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. So what are some other benefits that might, get people excited about starting something like this up as a business model?
Well, I think for most people, what the benefit is that this they're taking as the first step, because the real long-term wealth building is in owning assets. And so that's what I try to encourage people towards as well, because especially people, say, like me, might have had that or might have not had the feeling that they may have been delighted even just to own their own house. But not only can you own your own house, you can have other investment assets. So what's exciting for me is that you can go beyond yourself, you can have your own business, you can make your own money, you can do it following a simple step-by-step process, and then you can use that as the first step towards, you know, buying up your own assets and keeping those. And that takes you into another world, which is all about, then you have different problems like how to manage your assets, how to manage your income, how to structure your businesses, how to do your tax, how to do your VAT. So that's all the new world that we're now in. That's, again, another, when I think back, I just like, mind's blown.
Yeah, I couldn't think that you were possibly going to be doing that.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. Cool. Well, good on you. That's so good that you've come from where you came from and, you know, from low self-esteem, taking ownership of your life and being able to build up to this really cool business model and now teaching others how to do it as well. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I suppose the other part of it is that with what you're doing as well, you need to know a lot about online marketing, and I found that quite exciting, interesting. We started at the very beginning of last year, and it's just taken off in a way that I find hard to believe. But it's been really challenging, but really fun as well. You know, we had to grow again so much because you have to be willing to be seen as a leader or somebody who thinks that they have something to offer that's more so than maybe other people. And that feels really scary as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally hear what you're saying there. And I think that we've got to remember that, you know, everyone and collaboratively as well. People like to socialize and help others. And when you can build that community, then people will help each other, you know. Especially if you build a culture around helping, giving back, which is what I try and do. It's really good, positive place.
Yeah. It's really cool. I'd love to talk to you about that another time. Your membership and the things that you're doing in there too. How long have you been doing that?
Just over 4 years now.
Yeah.
Now we've got members from all over the world in the Electrician Success Academy. Yeah, and it's just is such a rewarding place for everyone to be. Like every member that's in there, as long as they're, you know, putting the time in and being a part of the community, it's a really rewarding feedback loop, you know? And that's what we try and just continually, for us, it's always been about how do we get our members to engage more? Because if they're engaging, they're learning and growing. And that's, you know, that's the biggest thing. So, because, you know, same with probably your members would be, you teach them certain things and they're like, great, I use that, go and use it. And then they get busy and then they don't use anymore. And so it's about re-engagement, come back, keep learning because you haven't learned the other stuff you need to know.
And one of the things that that we just started doing is because people go through the main program and then they stay on into a membership. As we started having guests in who are not just about our niche, which is obviously the rent-to-rent niche we've discussed here. They're talking about investment. They're talking about a property sourcing, or they're talking about, you know, publicity, or they're talking about all these different other areas that are just value adds as well. So we're just starting that now, and already we're getting great engagement with that.
Yeah, well, for us, we've got personal growth, you know, ice baths, energy, nutrition. Nice. Like we talk about if we can improve ourselves as people and our energy and our the way that we see life and interact with, you know, it every single day, then that's a positive thing. And some of our most popular ones have been totally non-electrical related topics, you know what I mean? So
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah.
I'd love to talk about what happens next, but if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to go back because you said so many good things in there that I'd love to know more about. My wife's mum was a single mum as well, and she was young as well. So I'd love to hear how that experience for you was. Like, how was it being a young single mum?
And obviously, yeah. Oh my gosh. It was everything. It was a tough time. It was an amazing time. I've only got the one son. I don't know, did your wife, mum, have other children afterwards?
Later, 16 years later, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, she's the type of person that I keep awake from just in case it's catching at night.
Yeah.
I think having a baby 16 years later. But no, seriously. I loved having Alex and being a mum, but it was so hard. And one of the things is that I feel now that I couldn't do the things that I could now offer him then. A lot of them are sort of mindset things, you know, where you just know how to be, you know how to bring the best out of somebody. You know how to help people to make their own decisions. You know how to make better decisions yourself. You know, you're more resilient yourself. And so I felt like I wasn't able to give him all of that. Well, I wasn't able to give him all of that. And but I think everything happens for a reason. That's what they say, that everything happens exactly the way that it was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
So I was so lucky in the fact that Alex is such a great boy. And he's just very compassionate, very kind, very thoughtful. He's very family oriented. You know, you think of the boys in their early 20s, and say, for example, so he goes to his dad one Christmas, and then, you know, me one Christmas, and the Christmas that he's not with us, he sends a package. And it's got individual Christmas cards written out with a personal note, like, "Oh, mom, like, when we set up the business, I'm so proud that you set up the business." You know, something personal to us.
Yeah, wow.
And awesome. Then it's each person. And then he also sends a gift. And the gift is also a personal gift that he really is thoughtful of. And I'm just so proud that he's that person. But I feel that sometimes he needs a little bit of a bolster because he doesn't always see how good he is. Yeah. And I can obviously see that in my past as well.
Yeah. Do you feel it's the way he is because of something you did as a parent, or the way he was brought up?
I think people really have their own personalities. So Alex was kind of a little bit, he was very chatty as a youngster, but as he got older, he became a little bit more quieter. I think people really have their own personalities. When you look at siblings with the same parents who grew up together, they really can be very, very different. And so I think it is a bit about the nurturing, especially on all of the mindset things, I think. But I think they have their own, we all have our own starting place. But I've waffled on, but I think it's a bit of both.
I think that you're right as well. We've got a 3- and a 6-year-old myself.
Yeah.
And such different personalities, like really different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, what are they like?
So my daughter's, well, when my daughter was born and as she was growing up, she was like a dream kid for sleeping. Like she was, you know, she was one of those kids at 18 months. You'd be like, it's time for bed. And she'd go, okay. And she'd walk off and get into bed and go to sleep. And you're like, we did it. We did it. We got the best kid.
Yeah.
And then my son was born 2.5 when Grace was 2.5. And he has so much energy. Like you could just see he's like a fireball of energy. He's like me. Like it's just so much energy. So my daughter has my determination. You could see it like when she's in competitive sort of situation. She's like, no, I'm going to win. Or like she's got that of me. But she's otherwise very placid. But my son is like the energy coming like from me, I think. So he's didn't sleep much ever. Still doesn't.
Yeah.
Wakes up at 4 o'clock still. You're just like, sleep in.
Yeah.
Just don't get up
yet.
But he's still young as well. So he's only 3. So I'm sure he'll get into sleeping through the night.
You're hoping.
Yeah. I know what to do though, I feel. I just need to direct his energy into sport. Like that's what I needed. But I didn't get that until I was probably about 11. And then 11 I started swimming quite a high level, like competitively, and but all my energy went into that, and I balanced out a little bit in terms of my mood. But
well, that's so true. They all need, well, we all as people need slightly different things. So your daughter needs slightly different things to your son, and I think with my son, he needed a lot more encouragement and you're good, and just coaching to think for himself and to believe in his own decisions. So I think that that's a real skill, to be able to make decisions and feel that your decision is right. So one of the things that I've learned recently is that, well, your decision is always the right decision, and it's because when you take your decision and you take action and then you see what the results are, you can then pivot or slightly move as long as you're going in the right direction that you want to go in. So then you know that it was the right decision to do what you did, because those were the lessons that you had to learn, or these were the experiences that you needed to have. And you can then go on to make your next right decision. And that just means that it's easier to make decisions when you have that. And so Alex used to really struggle, that's my son, to make decisions sometimes. And so when I said that to him, he started to find it much, much easier. And
Yeah. Is that something you developed? Like, because I remember you saying you were quite low self-esteem but around when he was born. So is that something that was maybe when he was 5, 10, 15? Is that something that you had then learnt and you were able to teach to him later?
Well, I was learning all along. Because I was studying, you know, doing this Open University, then I went to university myself. And also in the meantime, I was doing different bits of personal development. But I feel it's only really come together properly in the last few years since we've started. I started in business with my sister. That was another exciting thing about it. I started in business with my sister, 2016 onwards. So we're coming up to, it'll be 5 years next year. And that's when you're in business properly, not like a hobby like I had before. When you're in business, you have to grow.
Mm.
You have to grow for your business to grow. And it's just as simple as that. And our business was growing quite quickly. And so, you know, we had to grow. And that was where I learned
most. There's no handholding, is there? So you can't, you can't really pass it on to someone else at work when it's your own business. You've got to come up with a solution or face the consequences every single time.
And there was a couple of things that I learned, that one of them I mentioned already. Oh my God, there's a system for this. OMG. Oh my God. So you can actually look at the system, follow the system, know the system. Obviously when you know the system, you can tweak the system or do different things, but knowing that there was a system and knowing that everything that is a problem for me, somebody else has already solved it. They've solved it really well. So that gave me a lot of confidence because I knew that I could be able to find a solution to any problem that's going to come up.
Yeah. So what about before you had your business? So it sounds like you've grown so much from when your son was born at 18 through to the finance company and starting your business. So for someone else that might be in your position there where they're feeling in a situation where they've got low self-esteem and feel like they can never get out of it, because you've been through that, you were there, and what would you say to someone like that?
Well, actually, you can do it much quicker than you thought, because actually I took decades. If you think about it, I took decades. But what I would say to them is, it's your thoughts. You have everything you need to be successful already inside you, and you have to start believing that. But that's a hard thing to do when you don't believe it. But there are three thoughts that really help me, and most of the time we're thinking unconsciously. And if the results that we have in our life are not good, then the unconscious thoughts that we're thinking are not good. But you can just start to improve things gradually by consciously thinking some thoughts that are helpful to you. So my thoughts were, I will always be there for you no matter what, because a lot of the time we are actually not there for ourselves. You know, we're the first one to say, oh, Stephanie, that was so ridiculous, that's so awful, or you're such a bad person, or you should have known better than that. And So I will be there, always be there for you no matter what. So no matter what happens, I'm going to be there for me. I'm going to be my supporter. I'm going to help me. And I'm not going to let me go or say things like, I don't know, I can't, this isn't for me, I can't cope with this, or I'm going to be there fully for myself. So that's number one. So I encourage people to start believing that and also practicing that. The next one is, I am resourceful. And really, that's about what I've just said, that actually all of the problems that we have already been solved. Or most of the problems that we really let interfere with our growth have already been solved. So you can look to, well, we now have it all in books, we've got it online, but you can look to the people around you who've already solved these problems and ask them how they did it. So when you believe that you're resourceful, you know that you can find out, or you can get resources, you can get a little bit more time, you can get a little bit more money, because you can find out how. And the more that you do all of these things, the more resourceful you become, the more you're able to attract resources to you, until a point where it starts to feel like, God, this is so easy. Yeah. I'm so gutted that, you know, I struggled for all those years. And then the next one is, I am unstoppable. Now, when you're down, it can feel a bit of a leap to say I'm unstoppable, but you can just say I will keep going, because it's really, I will just take the next step. Because with the books like The Slight Edge, it's all about the difference of you take the next step, and the next day you take the next step, and the next day you take the next step. And you don't have to take a big leap. You don't feel like you can take a big leap for a start. But if you can just keep taking the steps every day, you're going to end up at your destination. And the time is still going to go past. So, you know, in a year, in 5 years, 10 years, in 20 years, you're going to be in such a different place just because you took the little step that didn't seem like it would have any effect.
Yeah, I think that's such an important lesson for people to realize it's not about sprinting for a short period of time and then stopping. It's about consistently putting blocks down or taking each step, like you said. And I think that's really powerful, like all three of those things you said. I actually had my daughter, she's been struggling to go to school. She's in year one now. When she goes with my wife to school, and then when I take her, she got really upset with me as well. And I pulled her aside and just said, hey, if you keep thinking about the negative things that you don't like about school, that's what grows. You know, it will grow and grow and grow, and you're going to like it less and less and less. So what is something that you love? And then she said, you know, her friends or whatever. And she said, I said, let's just think about that. And each day we've just been picking one new thing to say, you know, and just one new thing. I get her to say one new thing every day. And she's starting to really understand, like if she thinks about the things that she likes, it becomes more and more beautiful and more joyful. And but if she kept thinking about like, I don't like leaving mum and dad, or I don't like this and I don't like that, and that also snowballs in the wrong way.
Well, that is a beautiful way of thinking about it. You're so right that we get to choose our own thoughts, but it doesn't feel like it because it feels like the bad thoughts are the truth. And that is liberating to think, do you know what, I can choose to think something different.
Yeah. I remember doing an exercise where I tried, I think I was reading, what was it, 12 Rules of Success, or it might have been, I can't remember, but one of the things was, it was How to Win Friends and Influence People, the book. Mm-hmm. And one of the principles in there is don't condemn or complain, you know. And I wore a lackey band, and whenever I complained or condemned, I'd slap myself with the lackey band. And I tried just to focus on like even changing a negative thing into what the positive was of that. You know, I might have got hit by something and going, oh, great to know my arm still feels pain, you know, like appreciating it rather than like, my arm.
It's so powerful. And I came across a coach recently online. You know, I love the podcast. I really enjoy listening to yours. I find the story so entertaining. And we were talking earlier about your Hugh Hefner guy, but now I forgot the point that I was going to be. Podcast. Yes, that's it. Podcast. So Brooke Castillo is a coach. It's the same thing that we've just said, but the way she teaches it, you know, sometimes things just resonate with you, or it's the right time for you to actually hear it and be able to action it.
Yeah.
But it's that your thoughts create your feelings create your actions create your results. So your thoughts create everything in your life. So when things are where you want them to be, your thoughts are good. When things are not where you want them to be, you only need to look at your results, and then you know about your thinking, and you can work on your thinking. And that just feels like such a liberation as well.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Just knowing, even to know that some good things are coming as well, and to believe it. Is there anything else you'd like to chat about before we wrap it up today?
No, I think it's been great to be on, and I think the messages have come across really, really well. That you know, if you are feeling low or you're not where you would like to be, then it really is possible. Just keep taking those small steps.
Yeah, no, it's been amazing. And thank you for your sharing the things that you've learned in your life. And it's been really inspirational. I'm sure lots of people will get a lot out of it. So thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Greg.
See you later.
See you.
Okay, we're done. Thank you. Wow, that was awesome. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, it was.
I especially loved the second, half. I think that we started to get a good flow on, you know what I mean? That was,
yeah,
we had some good conversation.
That was good as, go on.
No, you go.
I was going to say that was good as well, because sometimes when I look back, it's not that I'm sad or hate myself or anything, but I always cry. And sometimes I've actually been like in like absolute floods of tears. And this time it was just a slight watering the sea. I thought, oh gosh, I'm improving.
when does that happen? What are you usually talking about?
Yeah, just when I'm talking about Alex, when I had him, when it was just all that time with the nursery, the benefits, in actual fact, it's not that bad. You know, a lot of people have got a lot, you know, worse lives.
Yeah, but it made you become you, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like you became you because of that.
And, yeah, yeah.
It's all led to this moment and beyond. And for him to become who he is, like that's, you know.
Yeah. So Greg, is there anything, obviously I'm going to obviously share the podcast when it comes out, but is there anything that I could help with?
So what I'll do is I'll have our producer edit everything. We'll put it up onto a Google Drive so you can have access to it all as well. We'll do some micro content that you can utilize if you want to share certain parts. But yeah, for now, just stay in touch. Maybe we can connect on Facebook and
would be great. What I was thinking, Greg, is I don't know if you do go on the podcast that talk about online courses. Do you?
So what was that? Sorry.
Do you go on podcast talking about your online course and your program?
No, I haven't really. I'm an open book, really. So like, if you want me to talk to me about that, I'll talk about that.
Well, I don't do anything like that, but I'm the guy who showed me how to do my evergreen funnel, which had worked out phenomenal. Well, when I say phenomenal, it's not phenomenal in the, but when we first switched it on, it was £8,000 a month, and since then we gradually got it up to £20,000 a month, and it's gone down a little bit, you know, with all this corona business, but we're building it back up and getting some other things behind it. But anyway, he was the guy who taught me, and he has a podcast where he has interesting people on who have got an online course or a membership. And sorry, I just had a quick look at your website before we started. And I thought, oh, you would be a great person for Sharp's podcast. So shall I introduce you?
Yeah, I'd love that. Thank you.
Great.
Happy to talk about that.
Thanks. And if I think of a way of getting you into my podcast, I will also.
Yeah, sounds good. And if you wanted to chat sometime about just purely product and what I've learned from building courses, happy to talk to you about that as well. Just let me know.
I would love to talk about that because obviously the membership is a really big deal, and I just love the energy around yours from what I've just seen quickly and online. And obviously, I've met you now, so
yeah, cool, awesome. Well, let's connect on Facebook and we'll be in touch.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Cool.
Thanks, Greg.
I'm off to bed. Bye for now. 10:30 p.m. here.
Ooh. Wow. Okay.
I don't really stop.
Wow. Bye.
Bye. Bye.